At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
What's up, everybody? Happy Thursday to you. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Gwynn and Chris. Rolling with you till 5:40. Padres go down in defeat last night on City Connect Straw Hat Night. Was not a joyous night at the end. Padres go down 8-2. Offense struggles. Dylan Cease continues to be what's the word?
Conundrum. Oh.
Conundrum works, yes.
Okay.
It continues to be a conundrum. But the Padres will have a chance to split the series here before the Philadelphia Phillies come into town for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Scraby.
Uh-huh.
I know you've been out fishing in the social media world today. What's the kind of the temperature today?
The temperature is not good. Of course it's not good. It's not good.
I figured.
I have to remember that they could still split the series tonight, and that is important that they can split the series. But with the Dodgers losing yesterday, the Giants losing yesterday, like these, and they were six games back, I think, last night. These are the games.
Still are.
Still, okay. Yeah, you're right, because they all lost. But these are the games that they have to win. These are the games that they need to gain ground on in the division, and I like Dylan Cease. I want him to do well. I don't get a confident feeling anymore when it's his day to pitch. Now, he could be the Dylan Cease that threw a no-hitter last year. He could be a Dylan Cease that strikes out 12. But then we just don't know what Dylan Cease we're going to get.
I think it's fair to have that particular feeling.
Okay.
Of not necessarily being as confident on that start day right now. And that's just kind of the reality of how he's thrown. I mean, it was almost scripted in some ways in how he has thrown over the course of the year, right? First two innings, kind of rolls through. Third, fourth, or fifth inning, something gets left. And, you know, sometimes he's able to, like, keep it where it is. But the grand slam, that was the gut punch right there.
That was a nail in the coffin.
That he had given up the two solo shots, and you're like, all right, cool, you can manage that. But then it was almost like someone took the needle, and in that one of the, they didn't stab the balloon. They just kind of slightly put a little hole in it. And you could just start to see it.
Yes,
it felt
slowly
like that.
But surely,
yeah, it felt like the build. And I felt like that in the building too. Like it was. I think everybody was still in it after the first two solo shots, and then the grand slam happened, and then it was just like, oh.
I don't care what team it is, but when you go down 6-0 early in a game, it's not going to be easy for any team in baseball to come back from that. But the Diamondbacks have an incredible offense, and it confuses me that Dylan Cease can strike out Corbin Carroll, what, two or three times, but gives up a home run three times, gives up a home run to James McCann, I think, in the 9th spot before he turns back over to Corbin Carroll. That it should be opposite. I'd rather see Corbin Carroll hit the home run, because then I'm like, whatever.
You would have felt better if it was Corbin.
Yeah,
yeah, man. It's certainly something that I would say at this point, you know, has to be somewhat of a little bit of. I mean, it's probably already been a worry, not a worry, but just concern, right? Because he hasn't been consistent this year. I think he would tell you the same. On the flip side, offense. And listen, yesterday was different because they were chasing so many. You know, it's tough. We've seen them do that kind of thing like once in a blue moon. But that's going down that early. It can take you some of the life out of you.
What's the mindset of the team? Like when your pitcher's not going well, it's 6-0, bottom of the fourth. What's that mindset like? For you guys,
I mean, the mindset is supposed to be, you know, all right, chip away, there's plenty of game left, get one, get two, you know, try to find your way back in it. But again, when you're chasing that many, then there just has to be zeros the rest of the way on the other side too. You know, that didn't happen either. Diamondbacks were able to get more runs to keep pushing the lead further, and so that one was tough. That one was a tough one. But tonight, Eduardo Rodriguez versus a little Randy Vasquez.
I like Randy Vasquez. Always like Randy Vasquez.
You're on the Randy Vasquez train
since the beginning. Since last year, I like the traffic cop thing. It makes the game a little bit more dramatic for me. So I like to see how he's going to get out of the trouble that he gets himself into. But obviously, I don't want to see that tonight. I know they don't have to win this game, but with the Phillies coming to town, you have to win this game because you do not want to go into the break losing 2 of 3, getting swept by the Phillies.
Listen, I like Vasquez.
I'm starting to spiral. Can you hear it?
I like Vasquez too. I'm trying to ignore it. I like Vasquez too. He has also suffered from being inconsistent. He's coming off of a really good one where he went six innings. He gave up, two runs on three hits. But the start before that was in Cincinnati. He only went 4 1/3. He got hit around a little bit. And so he's kind of had a little bit of that, too. Not as bad, I would say, as Dylan, but certainly you want to see if he can put back-to-back good starts together and start to carry some momentum as you go into the break, right? The idea was to go into this break feeling, doing pretty good. Right now, you took 2 of 3 from the Rangers. You got a split. You are trying to get a split here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
that's still important. Then
you still have a very tough Philly team coming in. So we'll see how the rest of these games shake out. But, it's not going to be easy.
It's definitely not going to be easy. I haven't even looked ahead to the Phillies. Are they going to see Wheeler? Are they going to see Christopher Sanchez? I mean, that scares me if they have to see those guys again, because we saw what happened the last time they faced those two.
Well, we might miss Mr. Wheeler, but
that would be nice.
Looks like we got Suarez Friday night, who we didn't see in Philly. No, sorry, we get Wheeler the Saturday. Hang with him.
I think Darvish is going to start Saturday, so
that's
it'll
fine.
Be Darvish Wheeler. I like that.
A little Darvish Wheeler, and then Sunday, let's see what we got.
Christopher Sanchez. Jesus Luzardo.
Right? Yep, it is. Mr. Sanchez. So you get like the three one.
All right, I'm back to you. This is a must win game tonight. This is a must win.
This is you want to get tonight for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I know. Adam said Suarez, Wheeler, Sanchez. The top three pitchers for them right there. It just seems like the Padres do this. They face all the great pitchers all the time. And I think I would notice if they were in a little bit better standing right now. But they still they're not out of it by any means. They still have 70 something games left. I mean, there's plenty of time. We know what they did last year in the second half, so there is some sort of positive I can think about heading into the All-Star break. But I want to see, do you remember what they did last year against the Braves before they went into the All-Star break? Because
yes,
what was it?
I think Dylan pitched the last game of that joint
against Chris Sale, because I was at that game that one day
and dealt.
Let me go back and see it, because I know that they lost that game going into the break, and then we know what happened in the second half. They lost their first game, and then they went on this crazy tear. But quickly, when's the All-Star break? Oh, there it is. They lost 2 of 3.
2 of 3 to the Braves.
Yeah, lost 2 of 3 to the Braves. But, like I said, they came out, won 7 in a row right after that Friday loss in Cleveland. So,
yeah. Well, they'll have to try to get in the right kind of win lane here tonight. Brandon fought through the game of his life. Farthest, deepest he's ever gone in a ball game. It's great. Why are you shaking your head?
Tony just sees me shaking my head. This is another thing that bothers me. And I told you this yesterday. It's just it really bothers me that these guys come in here struggling and then they become Cy Young. It's crazy. It's crazy to me. I know that Brandon Pfaadt is a good pitcher. I know that the Diamondbacks invested money in him, so they believe in him. But to have him go make his longest outing last night is just like, why? Why does this happen?
Yeah, I can't answer that.
All right,
part.
I'm sitting back. And
well,
say
I can. I can. The offense is struggling. That's how something like that happens. All right, let's get to break. On the other side, a lot of craziness going on today in the world of sports. NFL, NFLPA, there's some shadiness happening on that side. Jim Bowden speaks on who he thinks the Padres are in on. We'll get to that here in a sec. Yeah, and Rob Manfred, of course, pushing. We'll get into it on the side.
Rob Manfred, Manfreding.
He's doing Manfred things. More Gwen and Chris. 2:15 on the dial. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Chris Ello out for the rest of the week. We're talking some Padre baseball. Tune in to the Manager's Report with Mike Schilt this Friday at 9 a.m. on Bennett Woods. The Manager's Report is refreshed by EcoWater SoCal. Try alkaline water for just $9.95. That's $9.95 a month. EcoWater SoCal, keeping it soft since 1925. Go ahead, Scrape.
You know what Wood said on the roundtable today that blew my mind because I haven't even thought about it, but where's Tyler Wade been? We haven't seen Tyler Wade in weeks, it feels like. Like, he hasn't been used. I don't know if it was... The last thing I remember was him in Cincinnati making that error, but I don't think they're punishing him for that.
No, I just think there's been no spot for him, right? I mean, Gavin swung the bat well, so you've tried to have him in the lineup. Barriza swung the bat well, so you're trying to have him in the lineup. You're trying to get Jackson going, so he's not coming out. There just hasn't been, like... And I think you got to remember, he played what I think it was that came in that game in Cincinnati?
Yes, when Bogey had a cramp.
So at that point, you are – and so he came in – did he come in the next time Bogey had a cramp? Because Bogey had a cramp like twice.
No, Bryce Johnson came in too on July 4th.
What you have to remember is that's like 2 weeks out from the break. Guys are – they're not going to be taking rest days as you're getting ready to have
good point.
The break coming up, which is – usually when T. Wade finds his way in the lineup, right?
Yeah, good point.
Guys are, needing breaks, but we're right down the stretch before you get 4 days off, at least some of them. some of them ain't going to have any days off, but nonetheless, I think that's probably has more to do with it than anything else.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Let's go Jim Bowden. I mean, Jim Bowden, this is the time of year where everybody has their ear to the ground in baseball circles, trying to find out who could be on the move, the stove. The pilot is starting to heat up here.
That's it starting.
Exactly. Let's hear from Jim Bowden on who he thinks the Padres may be in on.
Now, with Atlanta, they're not going to do a rebuild. They're not even going to do a reboot. But that being said, you mentioned Marcell Ozuna with the hip. Still has some power. We still have some teams that need a little bit of offense to their lineup. And I think there's no doubt that if Alex has the right deal for Ozuna, he will move on from him. I've also heard that there's a couple of teams in particular, San Diego and Tampa Bay, that would like to pry Sean Murphy from them, knowing they have Drake Baldwin as their long-term catcher there. So I think there's a possibility that they could go. But if Atlanta does anything, it will probably be Ozuna, Murphy, or something small. But all the rumors about Acuna and Albies and Riley and some of these other bizarre Chris Sale name I've heard as well, I'm not getting that impression from the Atlanta Braves at all. So
there you go. Murphy.
Sean Murphy, catcher.
Yes.
For those who may be wondering who that is. Sean Murphy could be on the move along with Marcell Ozuna. The names he admitted that he has them connected with are interesting. Tampa is a team that already made a move here today to shore up their bullpen. I think it was Brian Baker that went from the O's to the Rays today. You look at the standings, there are a bunch of teams that are just like the Padres, like playoff teams that consider themselves playoffs, could use some pieces. Not all of them are offensive pieces that these teams need, but I think this has the potential to be a really active, kind of cool deadline because there are so many teams involved. And listen, Padres could do everybody favors by winning this night and putting the Arizona Diamondbacks closer to the sell mode versus the buy mode because they got about five pieces that I'm sure they would like to move off of. They could move off. I shouldn't say sure there. They could move off of because of expiring contracts and whatnot. The Orioles have already started. Now, they won't be a team that will be selling too much, but gosh, there's another team that's in that same kind of category as the Diamondbacks. Boston. Boston is another team in that they seemingly were saying they were signaling that they were going to be, you know, open for business, but they had won like six straight. And they're like 5.5 out of the division.
The Duran rumors with the Padres are still there. They kind of quieted down for a little bit, but they're still there. I don't know you know what I'm trying to say. I don't know
where that goes. What are you trying to say there, buddy?
I don't know. I don't know where that goes, but I kind of like this Sean Murphy thing. The only thing that I think would keep the Padres from trading for Sean Murphy is his salary. He makes $15 million a year from now until 2029. So he's under contract and under control until 2029.
That's only assuming that you don't know. We don't know what going back the other direction.
That's also true. I mean, you could be
about Murphy is signed through 29.
Yeah, he has a club option.
Option for 29. He's 30 this year. 31, 32, 33, 34 year. You'll have or 33 guaranteed. The 34 is the club option. He'll be 34 that year. So you get them in some good good space if that is the actual move there.
His like if you just look at his stats, he's only played in 56 games this year.
Started the year on the IL.
But he's hit 13 home runs. He's got a .225 batting average, which isn't great, but it's better than what the catchers are hitting right now in San Diego. And then he's got a .787 OPS with a 1.9 WAR. Like if you want to upgrade your catcher position,
it's definitely an upgrade for sure.
It's an upgrade. You're going to have to pay for it. But, well, yeah, how is he defensively?
He's good. I don't know that, you know, he's in the same realm.
Okay. Do it, AJ. Why aren't you on the phone right now? Why aren't you on the phone getting this done?
Ready to push the button already.
I am. But we'll talk more about Sean Murphy as the show goes along.
Rob Manfred. Let's go to Mr. Manfred now. Right? Is that where you want to go?
Let's go Manfred, because this is a big deal.
Let's go Rob Manfred. There has been a lot of conversation that basically there could be a lockout at the beginning of the 2026 season. 26 season, right?
Isn't the CBA up in December 26?
Let's check.
CBA MLB. Doing Let's some check. Live Googling right
Either
now.
Way, there's the conversations are already kind of percolating in terms of a work stoppage and what it's going to take to avoid some of those things.
It's through the 26 season.
Through 26. So after the 26 season, so 27 season.
Yeah.
Not next season, the season after. And, you know, last week I think we talked a little bit about Rob Manfred kind of, you know, trying to play the go to the players card, you know, when he's meeting with certain players. And I don't know if you guys saw this on Foul Territory. They were talking about it and how, you know, how it probably played to the players. You know, you haven't come to us any other time. And now as we get closer to the end of this collective bargaining agreement, you're like here in our faces, like trying to tell us that we're leaving a whole bunch of money out there. Why should they trust you? So, you know, all of a sudden it seems like he has kind of been hinting at a salary cap. Seems like he's be pushing for it now after the article from Evan Drellich today. It said Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred recently outlined his plans to convince players to make big changes to the sport's economics. Tuesday, Bruce Meyer, the second in command of the Players Association, said Manfred is trying to push for a salary cap and players in turn bear the right amount of skepticism, as we all thought they probably would when he was in their conversation. Listen, I get the play for Manfred, right? Divide and conquer is kind of how I see it when I first heard it. Like, All right, yeah, it makes sense. He's going to see how strong they are. Can he get in there and kind of shake some stuff up and see if he can get some guys thinking a different way? Strategy-wise, it's not a terrible idea. I don't think it'll work, though.
I don't think it's going to work either, because I was reading this article, and one thing stood out to me like a sore thumb. Some players are like, why are you pushing this on us? What is in it for you? What is the catch? Why do you want this so bad all of a sudden when for the longest time, you know, we've been doing what we've been doing? I don't know that players are going to come around to this idea. And yeah. I don't know how you get around that if you're Rob Manfred. Do you, like, come up with some other idea? I don't know. Players want their money. And yeah. they don't feel like – I said this morning on the roundtable. There's distrust between – players and owners, and the players, which I understand, and I'm partly with them, like, why are you forcing this on me? Like, anytime someone forces something on me, I'm always like, what is in it for you? Why are you trying so hard for this?
That's not even really forcing it. It's why are you pushing this so hard all of a sudden and needing our help to do so? You usually are not taking this stance. The pitch is like, hey, this is really good for the players, Meyer said. That's the second in command for the Players Association. One of the things players immediately seize on is, well, if this is so good for us, then why are they pushing it so hard? Why do they want to do it so desperately? Why do the other leagues lock out players to get it?
That's also a very good point. Like, other leagues are like, hey, we don't need to play because we want what we want. It's a weird idea that Rob Manfred's trying to shoehorn in before he gets done with his tenure as MLB commissioner.
Guys immediately understand that the reason they want that system is not because they want to pay players more. It just doesn't add up to them. And so that's where the skepticism comes in, and that's why I just – and I said this a while ago. The real question is, how bad do the owners want this? Because – right now, business is booming. Now, yes, there are some question marks about how TV and all that is going to run. But in terms of people watching, they have turned the corner in the positive direction on that. And so, you know, when business is good, how much of an interruption are you prepared to have? We interrupted, what, the first 3 months?
Yeah, I think
April,
the season
May,
started
June, July, right?
For what, COVID or the last?
Well, that was the same year. COVID was the following year. So you're 21. What was that?
21. They started the season on time, but they lost spring training, so they had to do like, or maybe they started the season like a week late. But there was scheduled double headers throughout the year, but it wasn't too much. The schedule wasn't too off balanced.
Exactly. They didn't end up missing any games.
Yeah, I was gonna say they got their gate, as we said.
How many games do you think does it an entire season in order to get a salary cap out of the players?
In
2025, are people really checking for baseball when it comes back if you sit out a whole year with everything that there is to offer now?
That's what I think would happen, is that people would be turned off by this because they're not going to actually understand what is at stake for the players versus the owners. They're going to see players being, and this is a person who's not informed, they're going to be like, oh, these guys are complaining about how much money they make. Like, this, I'm not going to watch baseball anymore. Baseball's dumb. Right. But that's not the full story. And
regardless, though, it's either way, it hurts their pockets as much as it hurts the players' pockets. Right?
It hurts the team, the owners' pockets way more. I mean, players don't get paid, but
I mean, it doesn't hurt the owners' pocket way more. They already got a lot.
If they don't get their gate, Tony, what are they going to do?
I'm just saying, it seems like a lot to get in order to have that kind of disruption. All kind of trying to forecast what's happening ahead. Let's get to break. On the other side, we switch it up to MLS. Jessica Sharman joins us, play-by-play announcer for the MLS Pass on Apple TV. We'll talk a little SDFC when we return. More Gwynn and Chris. 2:35 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby taking it up to 5:40. Padres and Diamondbacks finish their four-game set here tonight. 6:40 start Randy Vasquez on the bump for the Padres, and I'm drawing. Oh, and Eduardo Rodriguez on the bump for the D-backs. We'll get to some more Padre stuff here on the other side. Jessica Sharman will join us shortly, play-by-play announcer for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. We'll talk a little SDFC. Had a heartbreaker the other day. The Dynamos got them. Houston.
Not a big fan of that name, the Dynamos.
Why not? Why don't you like
that? I feel like some five-year-old came up with that name. Like, I would see, like, if I went to a soccer field on Saturday morning, I would see, like, three Dynamo teams for some reason. That's
I feel like that's a five-year-old reason for not liking the name right there. So I feel like.
Okay.
I feel like a five-year-old came up with that.
It's a professional soccer team.
So
what is
the
Dynamo? Let me see what a Dynamo
I mean, is the
is.
Sounders that much better, or... The Timbers?
I mean, it makes sense because of the Puget Sound.
What?
A dynamo is an electrical generator that creates direct current using a commutator.
All right. Seems like something that would be fitting for a soccer team. I don't know. What
an electrical generator.
Yeah, it's generating that kind of electricity. I guess, with the pass, man.
I guess the heat. Okay, fine. I'm done with this. I'm just going to dig myself into a deeper hole.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Who was I? You know,
Bronny.
Oh, yes, there you go, Bronny. For those who are into summer league hoops, like myself, although I haven't really been following that closely this year, Bronny James in action, having a good summer league, and Cooper Flagg go up against one another today. That's an intriguing matchup. I'm sure we'll. I know that it's the most expensive summer league ticket this summer so far.
Yes, it is.
I don't imagine there being one more expensive unless they end up meeting in some type of championship of the summer league. You know, that seems to be a big draw these days. It's so funny to me now that how popular summer league was. I remember when I was a kid going to see, like, Kobe Bryant play in the summer league, and it wasn't like this. It's like people were, like making a weekend of going to Vegas to, like, watch – like a whole summer league.
I would like to get to a point in my life where I'm making enough money to pay $3,000 to watch
right.
an exhibition.
To just blow on going watching summer league guys. Like, we're honestly, maybe three of those guys are in the organization playing on the NBA. Maybe three. It's probably more like one or two that are actually going to be on the NBA team.
Your camera cannot figure out what to do with your hand.
Sorry.
If you want to watch on YouTube, just search 97.3 The Fan.
I honestly forgot you guys were there. I was kind of just looking off in here watching some BP and the Red Sox. Or it's MLB TV. They have a feed in at the Red Sox at this point. So, yeah. So, Bronny James in action tonight. Cooper Flagg. Check it out if indeed you enjoy that type of deal. A couple other little notes before we get to Jessica. The Thunder and Jalen Williams agree to the rookie max extension. Has agreed to 5 years. Maximum extension could reach $287 million, according to agent Bill Duffy, who helped him get this nice deal. Williams, of course, was instrumental in the Oklahoma City Thunder winning that championship. He tore his wrist, I think, in like game one or two, played with it, and ended up playing really well down the stretch, all shot up. But now he's got it fixed. He had the surgery. But nonetheless, congratulations to him as we get ready for our guest. It looks like Scraby is like in the process of bringing Jessica on. Maybe, maybe not. Yes?
Sorry, Tony. I'm doing like a million things back here. Jessica Charman, like the Charmin. Pokemon, she said, which I appreciate because now I will always remember. But she is on the line with us.
All right, all right. Let's bring on Jessica Charman, play-by-play announcer of MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Jessica, thank you for your time. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Right now, enjoying the heat that is insufferable in Georgia. If you can tell, I'm not from Georgia, and I really definitely struggle with the American weather. It's tough.
It's pretty much tough all over the United States right now, except for where I'm at here in San Diego. So I do feel for you out there, Jessica. I got to ask you about our hometown and our hometown team, San Diego FC. They have surprised a lot of teams, although they had a little bit of a heartbreaker here recently against Houston. I don't know if you were able to watch that game, but that was not something this city was used to seeing. They kind of went back and forth all game and ended up losing 4-3.
Yeah, it was a really interesting match that I think, I don't want to say humbled in a negative way. I want to turn that into a positive. I think it was a great moment for San Diego to face some adversity, and it came at the right time. You want these learning moments midway through the season where you have a quick opportunity to bounce back. And I think you hit the nail on the head, really, with any time in Major League Soccer you get an inaugural team, a lot of the time the odds are going to be stacked up against you. A lot of times we're going to talk chemistry. We're going to talk about adjusting to the league. And San Diego has really blown people away. The fact that they're standing in the top position in the Western Conference right now. That Houston match, I think, just shows the vulnerability sometimes of the way that San Diego likes to play, right? They like to be on the front foot. They like to have the ball, but they leave themselves in a little bit of danger at some moments. But if I was a San Diego fan, I would take that risk versus reward because, as everybody knows, the style of soccer they play is so exciting that sometimes you're going to win 4-3, sometimes you're going to lose 4-3, but at the end of the day, you're almost always expected to see goals. And let's be honest here, most soccer fans, why do they watch the sport? Because they want to see goals.
Just as a great point for a lot of, you know, non-soccer fans that are new to the sport right now, it's a great introduction, right, to go into a stadium and see your team putting up goals. But you did hit on something I want to ask you about because the style of play that SDFC, I've heard that on a number of occasions, that it can be vulnerable to maybe with enough pressure losing the ball and it being an easy pickings the other way. Why haven't more teams been able to expose that in the way that maybe the Dynamo was? Or was it more on the SDFC maybe not being at the best on their game that night?
Look, it's my first time chatting with you, so I don't want to sit on the fence and say it can be a little bit of both because sitting on the fence on radio is really boring, right? I'm going to say that San Diego is extremely technical. The players are very good under those high-pressure moments. So even when teams try and create opportunities to turn the ball over, even when teams try and pressure them, they are able to have the technical ability to play through that pressure. So I think that this was maybe a blip moment where there were some lapses in concentration. The other point is San Diego had won 4 games in a row. And I've been a player. Sometimes we get, as much as we always say, it's one game at a time, as much as we say we'll never get complacent. Let's be honest here. We're human beings. When you win 4 games in a row, you kind of get that little bit of chip on your shoulder that, hey, we're invincible. And I think it was one of those wake-up call moments for San Diego where I'm hoping it came at the right time for them because they're going to play against the Chicago Fire side that really enjoys transitional moments, which makes this a really interesting matchup.
Talking to Jessica Charman, play-by-play announcer for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. And soccer's a little bit different, especially the MLS, because some of these players are being called to tournaments around the world and playing for their countries and some club teams. Like, it's not really seen with the other major sports here, but how difficult is this for MLS teams to have players in and out of their roster?
Yeah, it is a great question, and it is almost uniquely American because most of the other leagues are able, because of the way their seasons run, they're able to take international breaks during those windows where teams see themselves without key players. And San Diego suffered a little bit with the Gold Cup, with the fact that they lost players like Luca Della Torre, that they lost players like Aníbal Godoy. But at the same time, I think the way that they wanted to twist it is with that absence comes opportunity for other players, and it's a great opportunity for younger players to step up, maybe players that weren't getting as many minutes to step up, and with every space comes competition for others. But as again, coming back to my playing experience, chemistry is so important on the pitch that you want to try and build as solid as a starting 11 as possible so you get those repetitions. So it's definitely a struggle. Unfortunately, it's not going to be a struggle that Major League Soccer is going to be able to become immune to just because of the season right now. You can't take a whole stop for 3 weeks in the middle of this season just because there's international duty going on. And I think that San Diego was able to show that even with missing key players, they were still able to pick up those 4 games unbeaten. So they were able to really find the remedy to those absences where other teams in Major League Soccer really struggled. So I think the best thing to take from that is the San Diego squad is really deep, which is kind of surprising considering they don't have an academy or a second team right now, that they're still able to be so deep, even with the fact they don't have that second team that other Major League Soccer teams are able to dig into.
Jessica Charman joins us here, play-by-play announcer for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. And Jessica, we're going to get into the weeds, and pun intended, on this. There's been a lot of conversation about the pitch, and specifically during the kind of new World Cup, the Club World Cup that's going on here in the United States. I thought I'd ask you, because you obviously know a lot about this game. There's a lot of conversation about the grass and how it can be too short. It can affect the style of play in general. What is the perfect cut of grass, I guess? Because we have so much, so many different surfaces here in America, whether we're talking turf, you got all the different, the natural grass play, but it seems like soccer is supposed to be played on natural grass, but there is specifics even to that, right?
I think this is so funny, and I've had first-hand conversations about this, because before I moved to Apple TV, I was working for Charlotte FC for 3 years, and anyone that's been to Bank of America Stadium knows that they have turf right now, which is less than ideal for any soccer player. Look, I understand that with these weather conditions in stadiums, with concerts, all of the multi-purpose, that sometimes turf is favorable financially. But as someone that spent a lot of time playing in goal on turf, my body still has the scars to prove it. It is miserable in terms of turf burn. It's also miserable in terms of the bounce. I think the biggest complaint during Club World Cup, and I had the opportunity to commentate some of the games for the Zone back in the UK, the issue was they tried to put grass on the top of a lot of turf pitches. And when you play around with moving the field and relayering it and putting it down and trying to do it as quickly and as financially like feasible as possible, a lot of the time it's not going to feel great. And I think a lot of these European players came over, and I don't want to use the word spoiled, but I think I can say that as a British person, I get a pass. They're quite spoiled with the field standards, because soccer is the main sport in these European countries. So I think that it's going to be something that has to be sorted before the World Cup, because everyone knows the World Cup, all eyes are on the US. And unfortunately, and this is something I hate about the country that I come from, everybody likes to stereotype the US as not knowing about soccer, which is by far not true. But they're already looking to nitpick things about America. They're already trying to nitpick things about, oh, they say soccer. So we have to get the fields right here, so that it's not an easy shot for fans in other countries to kind of criticize America. But to answer your original question about the best grass, yeah, short, quick, nice, and I mean, every player likes different things based on their style, but for San Diego, they want short grass that allows the ball to move quickly, and then it just needs to be even, because anybody that's seen a goalkeeper mess up with the ball played back to them because of a divot on the field or something like that, I'm speaking from experience there. I definitely once had a ball, guys. It was, so when I was getting recruited from college, I once had a back pass come to me. It bobbled. I swear it bobbled, went underneath my foot, and I was like, I am never going to play college soccer. Luckily, I did, but my goodness, it was one of the worst moments of my playing career, watching that ball go in behind me from a back pass.
Well, thanks for sharing that story. That was a fun story for you to share. Jessica Charman, play-by-play announcer for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. I have two questions, and they're my final questions. One's quick, and one is a little bit longer answer. But how long did it take you to go from saying football to soccer? Because you grew up saying football, right?
Yes, I did. I did. I lived in England for 18 years. I came here to play college soccer. There are a lot of words that took a lot of getting used to, from cleats. I think my favorite one, and I think this is radio friendly, but ball shagger means something completely different in England. So that one took some getting used to. Please don't cancel me, but that one was tough. But soccer, I would say now that my job depends on it, I have learned very quickly. But when I worked for DAZN, I was doing coverage for the UK, and I had to take 1 month of anglicizing myself all over again, because they said I sounded too American for them. So we'll see how it goes on Saturday, because I'm having to switch my soccer brain back on for you guys.
Well, thank you for doing that.
Awesome.
My real question, I was reading earlier that you became the first full-time female radio broadcaster in MLS a few years ago, and now you're on TV with Apple TV. How important is that for you, to be the first full-time female radio broadcaster in MLS?
Oh, great question. I think it was a really special moment for me for representation, because obviously I want to be representative of being a female. But the biggest thing for me is just being the best at what I do, no matter whether, you know, my gender. I think it's about changing stereotypes about female broadcasters and being able to have somebody like that young girls can look up to and think that I can do it, because growing up there weren't any females doing it. And then the biggest thing for me as well is radio. I think radio, and I'm not just saying this because we're chatting on the radio, but it's such an important art and it's such an important medium. I grew up listening to soccer on the radio with my dad. It was a big connecting moment. And so to be able to be involved in radio was a full circle minute. And I'll say this, radio is so much harder than TV, much harder than TV. So any of these TV guys, the transition for me into TV was a million times easier than I think anyone that goes from TV to radio. So big props to everybody that works in radio because I think it's an amazing medium. But yeah, just being representative and just showing young girls, young boys that it doesn't really matter who you are, what your background is, whether you're a boy or a girl, you can do anything as long as you work hard and deserve that opportunity. So really proud of it and proud of the work I did in Charlotte and that it's allowed me to expand my wings now to represent on the national stage.
Good stuff, Jessica. We certainly appreciate you coming on and dropping some knowledge on us. We'll do it again some other time. Good luck the rest of the way and appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Good luck this weekend. Looking forward to calling the match.
Jessica Charman, play-by-play announcer for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. She was fun. She was fun. As all of the MLS Season Pass on that's on Apple, everyone who comes on is fun to talk to, and they do such a great job of, I don't know, promoting their game in a way that you want to kind of check it out, for sure.
They absolutely do, and they always have this, like, excitement in their voice about talking about it, and I think that sells it more than anything.
We haven't had one that was, like, annoyed to, like, be talking about soccer.
No, and, like, I was telling you this before the show, we've been doing this all SDFC season long. We have not talked to the same person twice, which is crazy, because
usually haven't talked to the same person twice, and the energy level has been like that every single time.
Phenomenal. Said, and I go, how do you pronounce your last name? She was like, it's Charmin, just like the Pokemon Charmander. And I was like, yes, that is an awesome way of explaining it. Thank you.
I'm glad she told you, because I would have been like, huh?
Huh? Charmander? Who's Charmander?
Who's Charmander?
Charmander's the fire Pokemon.
Interesting.
He's like a lizard. Your son's not into Pokemon?
No, not really.
Oh, okay.
Not really.
All right.
Not really. I'm not mad at that either. I like that he goes outside and can make up games by himself, which is like the ultimate kid thing to do.
That is pretty awesome. He's not sitting there playing like Magic.
No. Don't get it twisted. No, don't get it twisted. He's definitely in there on the TV playing video games as well.
I literally just said Game Boy like I'm 1,000 years old.
If he's playing Game Boy, we got issues. We got something.
Do you remember playing original Game Boy?
Of course I remember playing the original Game Boy.
Okay.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was a highlight of my life.
Time. If you looked at it now, you would be very disappointed, in your Game Boy.
I mean, the games that I used to play were that little ball one where it has to hit the bricks.
We got to go to break here soon, but I was actually, my wife and my oldest daughter are out of town, so it was just me and the three kids. And we were playing Mario World on Nintendo Switch last night.
Oh.
That was brings up some good memories. They didn't even know about some of the tunnels that you can go in. Like they were like, oh, you could do that? I was like, yeah, see?
Oh, did you go into the second level and then you get on the roof and you run all the way to the end?
You know, you try to get your running start so you can get to the highest part of the flag.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Taking me back, Tony. I think I might have to go play that tonight.
Let's get to break. Daily Gambit for all you degenerates. Up next. We're going to Chris. Sorry, I was listening to Cam Newton go off on Paul Feinbaum. And apparently they've been going back and forth. Quite entertaining, I must say.
Chris 3 o'clock. Would love that.
Oh, yes. He definitely would. He would enjoy that. 3 o'clock out of Dow, Tony with Junior, Matt Scraby. Little Daily Gambit coming our way. Scraby was trying to back out of doing
bets.
Some bets.
Yeah,
he didn't want to do any bets.
I found some.
Because he didn't want to really look to see what was out there. But now he has been forced to look to see what's out there, and we're going to do some bets. You got some good ones?
Yeah, we're going to bet on Cooper Flagg, Bronny James.
Oh, we're going to the Summer League, baby.
Yeah, when I see that Summer League is an offer, to bet on, which is...
What else is out there bet? We got baseball, we got Summer League.
Wimbledon, which we did make a Wimbledon bet, but those matches aren't actually until like early tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
You got the Scottish Open, you got UFC, MLS. They're saying outright winner for the Scottish Open would be Scottie Scheffler. Wouldn't that be cool to have Scottie Scheffler win the Scottish Open?
I didn't think about that. It actually would be cool. The champion of Scots.
The champion of Scots, yes. Rory McIlroy was in front of the media yesterday, and he was in a good mood.
Oh, was he mad?
No, he was in a good mood.
Okay, all right. Because, you know, he's been quite salty, it feels like, here.
Yeah, he's tired of everybody looking for him to save the PGA Tour. He's like, I tried, I'm out.
Listen, you wanted to step in TW's shoes. Here's your chance. You seem to be wilting under the TW pressure.
No one can handle the TW pressure. And for everybody who's wondering who TW is, Tiger Woods.
Not even Tiger Woods can handle that pressure at times. I can tell you that. Nonetheless, I'm glad that Chris isn't here for the mere mention of your guy. What's his name?
Rory?
Rory McIlroy.
He like legitimately hates him.
I think he feels about Rory the same way I felt about Garcia.
Garcia. Oh, Sergio Garcia.
Sergio, yeah.
Yeah, not many people like him either. Yeah. He's not a fan favorite.
No, he's not. All right, let's get to some gambling, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you like money?
I think about money a lot.
Do you like money without doing anything?
Winning.
Do you want to make money while watching sports?
I think Washington is a mortal lock.
Washington! Woohoo!
If you answered yes, this is your segment. Just don't blame us when you lose.
Well, nothing is ever your fault.
It's your game. Take it.
Gwen and Chris go through the top bets of the day in The Daily Gambit on 97.3 The Fan.
Daily Gambit is our daily sports betting segment here on Gwen and Chris. Please, everybody, gamble responsibly. The first bet we made last night was the total score from the Padres and Diamondbacks over under 8.5 runs. Tony said over, I said under, and Tony was right. There was 10 runs scored in the game, 8-2 Diamondbacks. Next bet was more K's, Dylan Cease or Brandon Fott. We both chose Cease. Cease, for giving up 6 runs, he did have 8 K's. Brandon Fott only had 4 K's, so we win that bet.
Sounds like we know what we're talking about a little bit right now.
Yeah, a little bit.
Right now.
Right now is a good way of putting that. Then, as I said, the Wimbledon matches are going to be happening tomorrow morning, so we'll wait to review those. But Mackenzie Gore at the Cardinals. Over, under, 7.5 strikeouts. Both of us went over. He had 7 strikeouts. This is why gambling is cruel, as our boss Adam told me one day.
You start to feel good after you nail the first two, and then one that you feel like is a pretty sure bet goes down. And then watch what happens from here. Let's go.
But that's it for this. So we're gonna go.
We only had 3 bets yesterday.
Well, we had 5, but the tennis.
Oh, the other 2 haven't gone yet. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
All right, tonight, D-backs Padres, over under 8.5. Tony, total runs.
Over.
Is today the day the offense gets out of the slump?
I think it is.
I'm sorry.
Stop. Even that, like. We'll just go day to day. They're out of a rut when they've done it like multiple days.
True.
Will they help contribute to scoring over 8.5 runs a day?
Yes, I'll say over as well. All right, here is one. If you choose, would you bet this +165 if Fernando or Manny hit a home run tonight? Do you think either of them will hit a home run tonight? You don't like. Basically, what I'm saying is, would you take this bet?
Yes.
Which one? Not that it matters for this bet.
It doesn't, so don't ask me.
All right, I'll say Manny Machado gets a home run. All right, let's go to Summer League because, you know, everybody wants to bet on Summer League.
Duh.
Cooper Flagg, over under 19.5 points, +300 for that bet. So you put down 100, you win 300 if you get it right.
Did you get away?
Ooh, I'm a go.
Let's go. He'll go over.
He'll go over. Okay. Has he played a game yet?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know if he's played a game yet.
If he's the true number one overall pick, he's gonna go over. So, next one is Bronny over under 19.5 points plus 800 for this one. You're going over. Bronny's playing better. I'm gonna say under though. Let me see if there's any other outstanding bets because we went through that really, really fast. I just want to make sure that there's nothing I really want to talk about. Brian Wu and Marcus Stroman. Oh, Tony, did you see the name of the Yankees pitcher yesterday that made his debut? It is a landmine of a name for an announcer. His name is...
Baseball Scrabble, huh?
His name is Cam Schlittler. Schlittler. That is a tough name.
Glad we played the Yankees already.
Yeah, right? All right, there's no more bets. But there is. We do have this, Tony.
Oh, I've been here waiting for a lineup and didn't know it was on.
All right. We got leading off, Fernando Tatis Jr. batting second. Luis Urias playing first base. Manny Machado is DHing today. Gavin Sheets cleaning up in left field. Xander Bogaerts, shortstop, batting fifth. Jackson Merrill has moved down one more spot to the sixth position. Jose Iglesias is playing third base in the seventh spot. Jake Cronenworth in the eighth spot playing second. And then you got Martin Maldonado catching for Randy Vasquez tonight. So there you go. Another, I'm not going to say it's a big deal, but Jackson Merrill going sixth tonight. What do you think is the...
This is about where he was. I mean, it's where he started last year, I feel like.
Let me look this up.
I feel like he started six. He was there for a while. Then they moved him up to five. He stayed there. And then people were like, move him to the leadoff or move him to the second spot.
He did.
And I believe Victor Rodriguez was like, no, leave him where he's at. And he stayed there and had a terrific season.
All right. He had his most at-bats in the sixth spot. You're right. So yeah. 226. Seventh spot, he had 178 at-bats. He hit 283 in the sixth spot. He hit 303 in the seventh spot. So maybe that could get him going, Tony.
Who else sees? Yeah, so listen, I see what they're doing. I think you're trying to get him going, obviously. I think you're fine with the first five guys in the lineup. You drop Jackson down to six. That allows you also to then push Jake down even further. And so you need more production than you're getting out of the lower portion of the lineup. And allow, you know, at least tonight with the lefty on the mound, my guess is that it would be maybe crawling up one more spot if it was a righty, hitting seventh. But you get him down in that bottom third to kind of give you a little bit more punch down there. And you also give Jackson out of a spot in the lineup where it feels like there's more pressure for you to get stuff done. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Being an out right now in the four spot, two spot, five spot, are probably, you know, too high to have someone working out some things that they're, you know, trying to work out.
I like them moving down Jake a little bit. He's been hitting 286 in the last seven games, a home run, four RBIs, four walks. He's been making better contact, so hopefully that can help out the back end of the lineup. But one of the things that happened last night in the game was Mike Schilt pinch hit for Martin Maldonado in the fifth inning. So, I know that that's because he wanted to have a quality at bat there, and there was an opportunity for them to score some runs. But if you're pinch hitting for your catcher in the fifth inning, is that something that they need to look into, like the Sean Murphy or something? Is that something you think that they're interested in?
I mean, that's already been the case.
Okay,
you know?
I'm just making sure.
That's they pinch hit there. They might have been their own best shot to do something, so you take a shot. Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, you're not pinch hitting there. If you have Sean Murphy there, you're not pinch hitting there in that particular spot. So, yeah, I think that's already been established, though. So, all right, let's get to break. When we return, where do you want to go, Scrape?
Oh, I am going to tell you why Dave Roberts has lost some of his fans up in L.A. because of fibs that he tells.
Oh, yeah.
What is that? Yeah.
this is such a weird thing for me, and I know we gotta go to break.
No, keep going.
In today's game, GMs, teams are so scared about giving an advantage or letting some information out that it forces their managers to have to do this song and dance where occasionally their wordplay gets them in trouble and turns them into a liar. And it's only because they don't want to get in trouble from their bosses that they might say the wrong thing. And so this is, I don't even know what you're going to go to yet or what Dave did, but I just laugh every time a manager finds himself in these spots because it's just like, it's so, a lot of times it's unnecessary. You're not really giving up all that much, but who, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if he was scared of the ball was going to be thrown at him in the dugout or something like that. And that's why he said what he said. And Tony just rolled his eyes into the back of his head.
I'm going to break. Okay. Scraby will have you guys when I come back. I will return a little later. Enjoy, Mr. Scraby. And we're going to Chris on the other side.
All right, back here in the LSC Palace, 97.3 The Fan, Matt Scraby with you. Tony Gwynn Jr. will be back at like 3:40 for the Big Five. Here's a little schedule update for everyone in the next couple hours. We are going to have the roundtable replay from 4 to 5 today. And then I will have a short Scraby show from 5 to 5:35 today. So we have you covered all the way up until... we have you covered all the way up until Sammy Love takes over at 5:40 p.m. for the EcoWater SoCal Padres pregame show right here on 97.3 The Fan. In the Big Five, we have a few topics that I think are very fun. Maybe not fun for one of them. Reynolds has a huge announcement, and something came out today, and they got me. If I am going to eat breakfast somewhere, I'm going to try this new item from McDonald's for breakfast. So we'll tell you about that in the Big Five. Also, I asked this question to Tony. Which is the bigger issue? Dylan Cease having a 4.88 ERA or the Padres offense averaging fewer than 3.5 runs per game since May 16th? So that's what we get into during the Big Five. Thank you to Jessica Charman for joining us earlier in the show. Play-by-play announcer for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. If you want to listen to that, you can go back to the podcast or you could go back to YouTube. Just go to 2:40 p.m. in YouTube. You can see the clock over my shoulder. That's how people usually do the, mark their time. So you can go and listen to her. She talks at SDFC, talks about different grass lengths. We asked her every single thing, and she was great. So appreciate that. A couple things. Let me get this Dave Roberts thing out of the way first, because Dave Roberts, I used to not really care that much about him. I wasn't, like, angry with him. I wasn't upset with him a couple years ago. But ever since last year in the playoffs, like, even before then, I kind of soured on him with some of the things that he was doing and saying. But I have he's completely lost me. And I can't... I can't look at him the same way after the Manny Machado issue that he caused because he wanted to pump up his team. But I've been seeing a lot of these articles lately, and Tony, before we went to break, is right, that teams do catch themselves in this sometimes. But I don't think I've seen a team catch themselves in something like this. I can't think of the Padres having something like this happen. But fans are starting to get a little annoyed with Dave Roberts lying to them. And here's what the latest lie, I guess, is being told by Dave Roberts. Tyler Glasnow returned to the Dodgers yesterday, but they were asking him yesterday about different players who were injured. And Michael Kopech is injured, and he just got off the 60-day IL. But reporters asked him if his knee issue will be anything long-term, how serious is it? And Dave Roberts said, quote, I don't think it will be a long-term situation. The very next day, Michael Kopech was placed on the 60-day injured list once again. So, I mean, I get that he has to protect some secrets. I don't think Michael Kopech is the biggest secret in the world that you need to protect. But, I mean, when you're getting, like, I think that we would be a little annoyed if Mike Schilt was like, hey, Brian Hoeing, knock on wood, Brian Hoeing is going to be just fine. And then the next day, it's 60-day IL. I do think the Padres, they tell us to take it day by day. They say that, you know, things are feeling good, and then it ends up players going on the IL for extended periods of time. I don't really consider that lying, because they honestly, in that moment, I don't think the Padres know. Like, when Mike Schilt is being asked the question about Jackson Merrill and his hamstring earlier in the year, he said, he's feeling good. We hope to have him back by the end of the week. Well, you never know what could happen between Mike Schilt saying that and the next day, and Jackson Merrill had a hamstring injury that got worse. And so I don't consider that to be lying, but I'm pretty sure Dave Roberts had to have known that Michael Kopech was going to go on the 60-day injured list. And so, again, managers and teams do this all the time, but it seems like it's happening a lot in LA. And my algorithm on my phone is like picking up on the Dodgers stories that people are like angry about with Dave Roberts. So that's how I see all these things. So that's why maybe I'm really aware of all of these things. But that is the news, that Michael Kopech going on the 60-day injured list the day after Dave Roberts said, I don't think it will be a long-term situation. Michael Kopech was really good in the playoffs last year, but he has had a year to forget this year with injury and all of that other stuff. Also, I wanted to mention that we were talking earlier about Sean Murphy of the Braves. Jim Bowden said that he thinks the Padres could be in on Sean Murphy, the catcher of the Braves. They have Drake Baldwin in Atlanta right now. And Sean Murphy's making a good amount of money. He's making $15 million a year. And so some are surmising that they can afford to get rid of one of their catchers, and one of those catchers will be Sean Murphy. He has another 4 years on his deal. He is getting paid quite a bit of money, $15 million each year. And so I could see why the Braves would want to get out of that, but I could also see why the Padres wouldn't want to get in on that. And I think that if they're able to move some salary back to the Braves, and the Braves are a team that would send Sean Murphy to San Diego, I don't see this being a bad thing. We're going to get into the catching situation at 5 o'clock, because I went through some of the numbers, and I was reading Kevin Acey's newsletter this morning, and so I was trying to, you know, figure out what is going on, because once, you know, it's becoming more of a thing where Mike Schilt doesn't even trust the catchers to take their last at bat before he makes a defensive switch. Last night, fifth inning, they pinch hit for Martin Maldonado, and he doesn't have faith, because I know that Mike Schilt backs all of his players, but he would much rather use a Trenton Brooks or a Jose Iglesias in that spot, because I think that they feel like if that catcher goes up to hit, it's a lost spot anyway. So why not pinch hit? And then you have Diaz coming in to play defensively. But you gotta think, how long is that going to last? How long can Diaz catch every single night? Even if it's not for 9 innings, it could be for a shorter time. But it seems like this is an unsustainable course they're going with the catchers right now. And earlier, so we were talking about that earlier, Jim Bowden. And then Robert Murray of FanSided, he's an MLB writer. Here is his tweet. Sources: with contenders searching for starting pitching, one name to cross off the list, Braves ace Chris Sale. Atlanta has not discussed Sale and will not consider moving the left-hander or any player under control beyond 2025, per sources. So we're getting two different sides of the story from two national reporters. And I tend to believe that Jim Bowden is a little bit more connected than Robert Murray, just because Jim Bowden was a former GM. He's been in the media game for a long time, so he knows a lot of these guys. He talks to a lot of these guys. I'm not saying that Robert Murray isn't connected, but I would think if we're going on who knows the most, who knows the person that's highest at the top, it's probably Jim Bowden. And I'm saying this without knowing it at all, but Robert Murray was not he's not a former GM. He wasn't a part of baseball. He's not on the MLB Network or anything like that. So, again, not saying that Robert Murray is wrong. I'm just saying I kind of tend to believe Jim Bowden because what he said made sense. You trade Sean Murphy, you get rid of his salary, and then you have Drake Baldwin. So I guess if the Padres are trying to not go over the luxury tax, why would the Braves take on a Padres player salary when they're trying to jettison the $15 million a year that Sean Murphy is going to be making until 2029, which is a club option, then he's a free agent in 2030. This also makes sense for me for another reason. Ethan Salas is supposedly going to be ready maybe in 2 years, 3 years. So if you bring someone in like Sean Murphy and he contributes and he is able to hold things together, Ethan Salas does not need to come up too early. They can take their time with him. And then once he is ready, probably at the end of that contract, you have your starting catcher. Again, Ethan Salas is really young. I think he's 19 or 20. I always forget because there's so many young guys. I know DeVries is now 19, but they don't need to force him in to the major or onto the major league team if they don't have to. And if they were to trade for Sean Murphy, then I think that would be a pretty good plan for the Padres and for their catching position. But again, we're going to go through the catching position at 5 p.m. because there's a lot of things that I'm going to have to backtrack on, because I've been sitting here all year long saying this was the deal when we got into the year. They knew that they were going to have catchers that weren't going to hit for a lot of anything. But we're getting to a point in the season where 90 games in and they're not getting any production from their catchers on a regular basis. And now they're basically splitting the duties and they're pinch hitting for the catcher in the fifth inning. So I think that's pretty telling of how the feelings of the Padres about their catching position. And I've also heard Mike Schilt in the last couple weeks kind of sort of say, yeah, we'll be looking at upgrading our catcher position. Mike Schilt is always going to have the catcher's back. And so he doesn't want to say something like, yeah, we're going to go and look for a catcher and then not get one. But I do think that AJ Preller is at least going to call the Braves and see if Sean Murphy's available. And if Robert Murray's report is right, that any player under control past 2025 is off limits, then AJ Preller's going to get a swift no. But I have to think that the Braves are going to listen to offers. And I have to think that when they put that disclaimer out there, anybody who's under control after 2025, we're not going to trade them. I don't necessarily believe that, because every player has a price. Every player does have a price. And AJ Preller, he'll make it work somehow. I promise. Well, I shouldn't promise, actually. He'll make it work, I feel, because he has in the past. And I know the AJ Preller haters are coming out in full force these days, which is fine, because they feel like he came into this year with an incomplete team. To me, I say AJ Preller came into this year with his hands tied behind his back because the ownership situation, budgets, things like that. I don't know that AJ Preller had a lot of wiggle room to make moves and sign guys, but he did sign Nick Pivetta. He did sign Gavin Sheets, and those two guys are huge for the team. So you got to give him credit there. All right. I'm Matt Scraby. This is Gwen and Chris. Gwen coming back here shortly. Chris on vacation, back on Monday. When we get back, the Big Five and our question about which is worse: Cease having a 4.88 ERA or the Padres offense averaging fewer than 3.5 runs per game since May 16th? We'll answer that when we get back on 97.3 The Fan. We're going to have the big five right now, and then we will have a roundtable replay from 4 to 5, and then I will be on from 5 until 5:35, leading you up to the fourth and final game between the Diamondbacks and the Padres here right here on 97.3 The Fan. Sammy Lev starts at 5:40 with the Eco Water SoCal Padres pregame show. So we have the big five. It's ready to go. So is traffic. Let's get right into it.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
If you love Mediterranean food, try Spiro's for authentic Mediterranean cuisine in Coronado or La Jolla for dining or takeout options. Visit Spiro.com. Now, last night did not go the way everybody wanted it to go for the Padres or Dylan Cease. And Kevin Acey had a pretty, accurate question. So I'm just going to ask the Kevin Acey newsletter question. And Tony, you're up first. Which is the bigger issue for the Padres? Dylan Cease having a 4.88 ERA or the Padres' offense averaging fewer than 3.5 runs per game since May 16th?
I don't think that you can put it on one or the other. I think both of them are big problems. Because if Dylan Cease was pitching like his normal self, the Padres may very well have a few more wins. I would say more than a few more wins.
He's 3-9.
But they would also have a few more wins if they had scored, you know, one run more, 1.5 runs more. So I think it's both. Both are actually, there isn't a which one. Mm. I think both are the issue, are part of the issue.
I did not see you going there, but it makes sense to me. Dylan Cease is only 1 of 5, though. So if I'm going to pick one over the other, it's got to be the Padres' offense averaging fewer than 3.5 runs per game since May 16th, because that's just a longer period of time. Dylan Cease, like, is not going every day, but like you said, it's bad for both sides. I mean, you don't want one of your main rotation guys having a 4.88 ERA, and it's just... I don't know. It's weird. It's just weird. I want Dylan Cease to succeed. I think he's a good dude. It just has been a struggle for him this year for whatever reason. And same with the Padres offense. So Tony Gwynn Jr., put it in perspective for everybody out there.
Number four.
Colorado coach Deion Sanders said he'd like to see College Football Institute a salary cap. Lots of salary cap talk today. He said at Big 12 Media Day, "This stuff has gone crazy. Nobody knows where it's going to land, where it's going to end." And on July 1st, this is not him anymore. On July 1st, the House settlement allowed schools to share up to $20.5 million in revenue in year one with athletes across sports on campus. Some third-party collectives representing schools, however, have signed athletes to contracts before the settlement using money from collective that does not count toward the revenue-sharing total. Deion also took aim at tampering with rosters because some collectives will lure players into the portal with promises of paydays larger than what they're currently earning. Coach Prime went on to say, quote, "I would see a player and see he got an offer from another school, and I'm trying to figure it out. How is that possible when the guy isn't in the portal? How is that? You've got a $5 million offer. How? And the kid isn't in the portal. We need to be upright and upstanding," end quote. I'm up first. Do we need a salary cap in college sports? Seems like we're going to need some sort of salary cap in college sports because things are getting crazy. And if they're doing the whole collective thing and then not having that money go towards the $20.5 million house settlement, then yeah, they're cheating the system. And so they have to put some things into place so that this doesn't happen. And so they can make a fair playing field for everyone. And I'm actually surprised that Coach Prime is saying this because he doesn't seem to have any issue recruiting guys. So I actually will stand up and clap for Prime for saying this because I think people will listen once he brings this up. Tony, what do you think? Do you think they need a salary cap?
He didn't just start. He's been saying this for a very, very long time.
I did read it. He said something in spring, too.
Yeah, this is something that he has been on. I think he's right. I don't know if it's the salary, if that's the name of it, a salary cap, but some type of limiting. And by the way, the collectives aren't cheating. I mean, they're allowed to do that based on the environment, but there does need to be some rules put in place. And it doesn't need to restrict the students from making as much as they possibly can make. But there does need to be some guardrails, if you will, to kind of keep this thing in a certain, so that it's not the Wild Wild West like it seems. Like, you shouldn't be able to offer a kid who isn't in the portal yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not in the portal, you shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, it's tampering.
Yeah, it should be tampering, period.
College sports is getting so complicated that it's really becoming hard to even follow the sport itself. Like, it's cool to watch the games and I like the games and all that, but like everything outside of it is just so complicated that I stopped listening.
Number three.
There was a report yesterday from Don Van Natta Jr. and Kalen Collar of ESPN.com, and it had a lot of stuff regarding the collusion ruling that the NFL and the NFLPA hid from everyone for more than 5 months. Here's one from the first sentence of the article's final paragraph. Quote, on Wednesday, a source familiar with the league office said the NFL notified the union of its intention to seek legal fees and costs in excess of $12 million. End quote. That's a direct byproduct of the NFLPA's decision to unpause the post-ruling litigation process by exercising its right to appeal the decision. As one source with knowledge of the situation, the NFL previously offered to forego seeking reimbursement of attorney's fees and costs in exchange for the PA waiving its appeal rights. That's not an uncommon move or anything like that at the tail end of a failed legal
thing. What is going on?
I know. Let me explain this. So basically, the NFL went to the NFLPA and said, you're going to lose this. If you don't appeal, we won't go after you for the legal fees that we're losing right now. But if you do want to appeal and you don't drop this whole thing, then we're going to go after the legal fees and make you pay for them since we won the case and you lost. So, Tony, should the NFL continue seeking the money, or should they just let it go?
Is it the NFL or the NFLPA?
It's the NFL is going to go and seek $12 million in legal fees from the PA. Because for the decision that was made by the arbiter, and he said that the NFL was not colluding, even though there's evidence of collusion. This is very complicated as well, basically what I wanted to ask is, should the NFL just not be greedy and just forget about this $12 million?
Of course they should, but that isn't the way of these two entities, right? I mean, if anytime you can pierce, you know, gouge whatever the other side as it pertains to the NFL and the Players Association, they're going to do it. Same thing is going to go in baseball. Same thing is going to go in the NHL. Maybe the only place it doesn't happen is in the NBA. They seem to be in harmony most of the time. But in the perfect world, the NFL would be like, all right, we won, cool, let's just move on. It's good business. Instead, they want to stick it to them. We're going to get our $12 million back. Not only did we beat you, you're going to pay for our lawyer fees that beat you.
Oh, it annoys me so much that they want to do this. Because they weren't found to be guilty of collusion.
They were definitely guilty.
But the ruling said that there was evidence of collusion. There was just no smoking gun to actually say that there 100% was collusion. It's very, 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 like, it's very dictator of them to be like, you know what? We were colluding. You lost. I still want my money from you. It just makes me mad. I hate when money becomes the root of everything. And that's what is happening every single day now. More and more people are making money the root of everything. That was my PSA for today.
Number two.
Trinity Rodman is the girlfriend of Ben Shelton, who was playing at Wimbledon, and had some words for the TV announcers because they kept showing her on TV, and she posted on Instagram, quote, for those who don't know, My name is Trinity, not Tiffany, which is what they were calling her on
Tiffany
the broadcast.
Rodman? Oh, man.
She then went on to request that the Wimbledon announcers stop bringing up her estranged dad, NBA legend Dennis Rodman. She said, quote, also for Ben's matches, he has his family there as his support system, which includes his dad. My dad's not even in my life. No need to bring him up during his matches when I don't even want him talked about during mine. It's his and his loved one's moment. Thank you. End quote. excuse me. I'm up first.
Did you go first the last time?
No, you did.
Okay,
you can go first if you want.
No, go ahead.
The question is, should she be upset about this? Yes. The Trinity Tiffany thing, that's pretty embarrassing. That is ridiculous. But the Dennis Rodman thing, he is your dad. He is a pro athlete. People know his name. You're going to make that connection. Now, if you're going the whole match and like talking about her and him and you don't know their relationship, then I think that's weird. But if they show her and they're like, oh, there's a Tiffany Rodman, Dennis Rodman's dog. I don't know how you could stop that. And it's not taking away from Ben Shelton. I can understand why she does think it's taking away from him. But it's part of being Dennis Rodman's daughter, I would believe. And being a professional athlete as Dennis Rodman's daughter. Blah, that was hard for me to say. What do you think, Tony?
Yeah, no, I feel her. I feel her in her frustration with that, you know, always being the case. You know, every time she's on TV, typically, with the exception of her soccer matches, because I think she's got a little bit more say in how she's covered in her own sport. I don't know that she has that kind of, you know, pull or really right in this particular case, right? I think she's well within her right to correct them from calling her Tiffany. Her name is clearly Trinity.
That's fine.
That was a big miss. So yeah, for sure. But you know, she's kind of a guest, so to speak, in the tennis world right now as she's dating Ben. And I just think that it's although she has the right to give her opinion on it and give her take. I mean, this NBC and whoever's covering. Now, granted, I didn't hear how they covered it. I didn't hear that, you know, how long they might have dragged it out. You know, a mention is likely going to happen.
Yes.
In every situation except for her playing on the soccer pitch.
Yeah, I was.
Every
trying
other
to
situation.
Find, yeah.
Every other situation is most likely going to come up, and that's also a testament to her. If she wasn't who she was, we wouldn't have connected the dots of whose daughter she is as she's dating, you know.
Ben Shelton
right now. So, yeah, I feel her, but it's not a whole lot that she's going to be able to do about it.
No. Number one. All right, the fun question. McDonald's has a big announcement, Tony, and they are going to be offering three new spicy McMuffin varieties starting on July 10th.
Spicy McMuffins?
Yeah, starting actually, it was 2 days ago it started, but they have joined the menu. Today, actually, I'm going to McDonald's after the show. Fan favorite snack wraps are rejoining the menu. They're spicy and ranch are the two flavors for the snack
wraps.
Wait,
so the spicy McMuffin, is that like an egg?
Let me tell you. The egg McMuffin, spicy egg McMuffin, egg, cheese, Canadian bacon, English muffin with spicy sauce, sausage McMuffin, sausage, cheese, and pepper sauce, and sausage McMuffin with egg, sausage, cheese, and pepper sauce. So, my question, because I do love the snack wraps, but here's the question, Tony. Where does McDonald's breakfast rank on your list of fast food breakfast spots?
Okay, before we move forward, I need you to clarify. So, the new spicy McMuffin.
Yes.
Doesn't have chicken. It's just sausage and or Canadian bacon with some spicy
sauce
on it.
It's basically the sandwiches as is plus some spicy sauce on it.
Oh, I thought McDonald's had really taken a step forward there. I really did.
You want a chicken sandwich for breakfast?
Well, you know how Chick-fil-A has the egg sandwiches with the chicken, right?
They do.
Man. If that would have been a strong play for McDonald's had they gone that route. But they did. They went lazy. They went the they went the spicy sauce way. Which, fine, I get it. I don't know that that's going to move the needle for me. I personally, in terms of this particular sandwich, now the question is, what do I rank their breakfast?
Yeah.
It's elite. McDonald's breakfast is elite. I'm sorry. If we're talking in the fast food genre, there ain't that. I don't know that there's a better one.
I can't go to Burger King for breakfast. Sorry.
Hell no.
Sorry, King out there.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I mean, Jack in the Box has decent breakfast. But...
Jack in the Box is up there. Jack in the Box is up there. But, I mean, listen, the hash brown that McDonald's created, elite.
It's heaven.
It's elite.
Heaven in a hash brown.
then they got with me back in the days where, you know, we didn't really care what we were putting in our bodies. When they came out with the McGriddle, the pancake.
Yes.
Come on, man.
Just a piece of bread soaked in syrup.
Come on, talk. Like, you can't get any more downright dirty with that. Oh my gosh, that is McDonald's is at the top of the food chain there.
I agree. I don't know why. I'm a sucker for
Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A has closed the chicken sandwich itself has closed the gap in a big way.
I need to try this Chick-fil-A breakfast. Never had it.
Yeah, man.
Wendy's is also decent, but
Wendy's has stepped their game up, but they're inconsistent.
Late.
Yeah, they're inconsistent. And they didn't have breakfast forever. That was a recent move.
Yeah, that was a recent move. If you're curious, the snack wrap only has 320 calories. So that's
I'm
nice.
Not.
But all right, cool. I am glad you enjoy McDonald's breakfast as much as me, because I felt like a fatty when I was like reading this.
No,
article.
When I was at San Diego State, I think I lived on McDonald's breakfast felt like every day. It probably wasn't every day, but every morning I was already up from weights or whatever it was. Get that McDonald's breakfast, dog.
Yeah, I dated
little egg McMuffin or sausage with egg. Split the hash brown in half, throw the other half onto the sandwich. You got yourself a hearty breakfast.
I'm hungry now. I am hungry now. I dated a girl who used to order the egg McMuffin and then say no egg. And I'm like,
what are we doing?
How?
Don't do that.
How? You're ordering a McMuffin now. Yeah. You're not ordering the egg McMuffin. You just want cheese and Canadian bacon.
I'm old enough now to remember where that used to be like a top mistake. That would happen when you go to McDonald's. You order, you almost had to say with egg at times, because I would come home and just have some sausage in that bread, dude, and be furious.
Just so dry. It's like you need the egg in there for some sort of moistness.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to find, and you see it on like the OG McDonald's commercial. When they crack the egg in the little circle thing. So
do have those.
They do have those. I'm going to get me a couple of those.
Me too. I'm going to try to make a spicy egg McMuffin. That sounds delicious right about now. All right. That is it for the Big Five. And that will do it for the main Gwen and Chris show. Next up, we have the Roundtable. From this morning, and then at 5 o'clock I'll take back over, fill you in on the latest news of the day. So stick around, go nowhere. The Roundtable is up next.